it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Player Profiler and our podcast network is super resource intensive, and we rely on premium subscriptions to the website PlayerProfiler.com to keep the engine running. Go there, sign up for our player rankings, Dynasty Deluxe, DFS package, or go all in. Those that subscribe are everything to us.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Man vs. Machine. This is episode 3. The Machine is back from his adventure down in Colombia. He has been researching data, bringing his full force to this conversation, as we're going to be talking some running backs today, wide receivers, and some tight ends. Dario, how was Colombia?
It's great. I was, I was visiting. Basically, my family has this farm that's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And we got to, ride some horses, see some waterfalls. Was a nice little, not quite a darkness retreat, like you said, but, just down here making the most of the days that I got, you know?
That's awesome. I joked around with Dario. He got back and I said, welcome back from your darkness retreat, Dario. You're back to the States now. We're about to hop into Man vs. Machine. I am the man of this episode, and Dario?
I am the machine.
And we're going to add a little bit more to that one. Here we go.
I'm the machine.
That's what we wanted to hear when we do this. All right.
We're building up to it.
we're getting there. We're getting there. It's a work in progress. We got a, V2 of the machine here coming soon. let's talk about some running backs. So we were looking at the rankings. The machine prompted that he thinks, and I'm assuming you think I have Penny too high. Right now in the rankings, I have Penny ahead of Gainwell, although I am high on Gainwell as well. So this will be an interesting discussion because I like both running backs, but lay down the law here. What do you think is wrong with these rankings?
I think this is, I like to come at this from the perspective of there is no right answer 5 months before the season starts. I think it's really interesting that they come out so close together in the projections. Rashawn Penny got very little money in free agency. And I believe Howie Roseman was quoted saying that, they trust Gainwell this offseason. There's obviously rumors that they're looking into drafting Bijan at 10 overall. So I think this is kind of more of a conversation starter, more so than a hot take on either side. I think that currently we project Penny for more carries, Gainwell for more targets and receptions. I think that much is clear. And there's going to be a big hole in this offense from Miles Sanders. But obviously, Jalen Hurts is going to eat into the rushing share of this offense. Right now, we have him projected for 28% of the carries. And I think that he could very well exceed that. Like, I think last year he had many games where he was upwards of 30% of the team carries. So there's just, I think, there's going to be some changes in this Eagles offense. And I think that it's kind of an interesting backfield to dissect for sure.
It definitely is an interesting backfield. And I mean, I love just in general, this offense you want a piece of, right? When we looked at last year, even just down the stretch inside of the playoff best ball inside underdog, I stacked this backfield. I went with Sanders, Gainwell, and Boston Scott and finished, I think, in the top 30 in that tournament. But it is a hot hand approach. I mean, we never know. They're always rotating backs in and out, right? We have series at plays. We have goal line carries. They rotate them in and out. The one thing, though, that I really like about Rashad Penny, and he's been a tantalizing player. And his upside is something that we just cannot ignore, right? We take a look at what he's done in his career outside being injured. Of course, that's the first and foremost. But when he's healthy and on the field, in my opinion, he has legitimate RB1 upside. I mean, when we look back as far as 2021 down the stretch, this was the year Jonathan Taylor like burst on the scenes and just dominated and was the number one pick in fantasy, you know, for the good portion of last year. Penny actually finished ahead of Jonathan Taylor's in weeks 14 through 18 in fantasy points. I mean, he was dominating the scene that year. I mean, we look at it was finally the player that we imagined when he came out of San Diego State. And just kind of looking at what he did, right? Weeks 14 that year versus Houston, he had a total 138 yards and two scores. Right, weeks 15, he was against the Rams that year. They were just a brick wall of the defense, only 44 yards. But then listen to the stretch. Week 16, 135 total yards and a score. Week 17, 185 total yards and two scores. Week 18, 190 total yards and a score. I think we can't expect that on an every week basis. However, he was playing in one of the most, I would say one of the worst offensive lines in Seattle at the time with a negative game script, still averaging over 6.2 yards per carries over this last 176 attempts. You know, I just talked about how explosive he is when he's healthy on the field. Now he's with the Eagles, who have arguably the best line of football with the number one game script in the NFL. That's going to benefit the two down back as well as the goal line back in short yardage. And we take a look at what he was able to do with bad offensive lines. When he was already running back number three and breakaway right with any running backs over 150 snaps. And I just kind of want to show people the data analysis tools and kind of what I've been doing here with researching. So data analysis now, this is the new tool that we have here. Let's go ahead and get us off the screen so people can actually see this thing. I can't find our thing. There we go. Okay. User error. Man error here. So this is the new data analysis tool, but we have breakaway rate. I set the minimum snaps to 150, right? And we have
right, because Rashad Penny would not qualify if you set the minimum any higher because he's never on the field.
Correct.
I'll interrupt you and point out that, I mean, it's kind of funny because I think that someone in the comments pointed this out. Like, we're always kind of, there's a bit of ideological inconsistency in who's making what arguments. Like right now you're going for the injury prone guy, and I'm about to tell you that you have Penny projected for more carries than he's ever seen in any season of his career by 50 total carries. So it's not even close. If you're gonna, you know, talk about the way you were analyzing Tua, for example, I think that there's a lot of reasons to be very scared of just drafting Rashad Penny in general. I do agree with you. He's been extremely explosive, and I think that from Gainwell's perspective, there's definitely some red flags in that his target share went down from 11% as a rookie to just about 6% last season. His opportunity share went from 25% to 19%. But I think that's a byproduct of the emergence of Miles Sanders last year, the fact that they wanted to kind of get the most out of him in that last contract year because they knew they wouldn't re-sign him. I think the team trusts Gainwell. He's going to see those touches go back up. And I think that, you know, I'm very much a lover of upside and chasing that and hoping for, you know, that extreme high scoring weekly potential with a guy like Penny. And I think his ADP is very palatable right now. But, you know, if you look at FFPC, Gainwell's going 20 picks ahead of Penny. And I think that's about right. I think if you look at Underdog, Penny is going 35 picks ahead of Gainwell. So it's very polarizing right now. I think that we should be leaning toward Gainwell. A lot of us play in PPR leagues where those receptions are ultimately going to be more valuable, and Gainwell has more room for that ceiling. You talked about the game script, and I think it's virtually impossible for the Eagles to sustain the extreme efficiency and the huge leads that they were getting out to every single week last season. So there's a lot of different perspectives that I think point toward Gainwell ahead of Penny right now.
So ADP on the move right now. Penny has been rocketing up boards. As we can see, if you go to even just to our seasonal tab on the rankings, let me go ahead and show that for folks. And we
This is top stuff. You can't be giving this away, Billy.
and we go over to running backs. Let's go ahead and take a look at this, right? So We have rankings right now. I have Penny as running back 36, Gainwell's 37. So we're neck and neck, right? This is why we're having this discussion. Look at the ADP difference already. 102.2 for Rashad Penny and Gainwell 129, minus 3, plus 15. So we've seen Penny start to raise over a full round. And I get it. He's injured all the time.
That's underdog ADP. Don't you trust the high stakes ADP more? I mean, this is like, I'm just pulling all your own cards back against you here because the high stakes ADP.
Man, look at this machine learning. He's learning.
Has Gainwell 20 picks ahead. We're talking 125 for Gainwell, 145 for Penny. So
yeah,
I don't know if your own logic is starting to cave in on itself there, Billy. It's very human. I don't blame you, but.
I understand. Like I love both these guys, and I think it would be an error to lean one way or the other and go that way every time. I think you have to have ownership of both these guys, especially with how close we have them both in our rankings. And as you said earlier, we have them as one as the pass catching back, and the other one as the, you know, the two down bruiser, right? And when I look at this though, when I'm drafting and I look at this, and this is now I'm using the machine's logic against them with upside, right? We had this discussion with Elijah Mitchell. Let's have this discussion now with Rashad Penny. Rashad Penny, if I were to say these two running backs' names, Rashad Penny and Kenneth Gainwell, and said one of them finished as the RB1 for the season, which one would be less of a shock to you?
Less of a shock would be Gainwell, because I think you have to have pass catching in your game to have that RB1 overall ceiling. And I think that it'd be a little bit silly to argue that Gainwell doesn't also have upside on the ground. I mean, you saw him down the stretch in the playoffs last season. I think that those playoff performances from Gainwell were a big part of the reason that the Eagles were willing to let Miles Sanders walk. Because, I mean, we're talking about a game where he would get 12 carries and he took it for 120 yards and a touchdown. Like, he's been clearly demonstrating his ability, 4.5 yards per carry last season. Let's see what his the run blocking was, obviously good, and his yards created per touch, 2.74, just very solid performance from Gainwell. I think that we can.
Oh, and he was explosive in the playoffs. Absolutely. But can a 5'8" framed body handle that amount of touches to what it's going to take to be RB1? And I know it's counterintuitive to say, you know, against Penny, but Penny has the ability to break it and take it to the house on almost any given play. And now behind this much improved offensive line, he was, like I said, he was averaging 6.2 yards per carry over.
You know, there's a little search icon there on your player page. You can use it to look up a guy by the name of Austin Eckler, who's I'll give it to you. He's an inch taller. He's also 2 pounds lighter. So kind of roughly the same size as a Gainwell prototype. I don't know if you remember, we've seen RB1 seasons from Danny Woodhead, James White. So
he's bringing out Danny Woodhead. Here we go.
So there's a lot of potential here. I think that just shaming Kenneth Gainwell for his height is not the way to go there.
Yeah, I am definitely as Dave here in the chat says, I'm a heightist, right? I'm just against the 5'8" running backs. No, I love Kenneth Gainwell. For me, it just breaks down to upside and what we have already seen from an explosiveness of Rashad Penny. Again, back to back in the rankings, we are splitting hairs here. We like both these players, and we like this offense in general. I think it just wanted to prompt the debate and the discussion about two players who could potentially be league winners inside of your fantasy teams. Let's move along to one that you don't like my ranking, Tyreek versus Ja'Marr Chase. And these are two round one picks right now in any format that you're in. Talk to me about.
Yeah, this is one where I think it's just, if you look at just about any receiving metric last season, Tyreek Hill just absolutely crushed it. We know that that was because of how much he was able to elevate the Mike McDaniel offense. And I think that right now there's kind of a gap in perception between these two guys, where like Ja'Marr Chase, I think because of his youth, he's being drafted, you know, it's a very small gap. We're talking about having an ADP of like 2.5 to an ADP of sort of like 5.5. I mean, if we look at the FFPC ADP right now, it's Ja'Marr Chase at 5.4 and Tyreek Hill at 10.2. It's not a very large gap at all. I just think that my case here is that gap needs to shrink. Tyreek Hill had an absolutely insane season, and I do fear that there's a little bit of a, you know, kind of a Stephon Diggs effect where his first year in the new offense might be his best year. But even if he crashes back down to earth a little bit, he had 2,000 air yards last season. He had the highest targets per route run. He was third in overall targets, and he didn't even necessarily crush in terms of touchdowns. He only had 9 total touchdowns. So there was very much some room to grow for Tyreek Hill in the touchdown department. I think that, you know, if I told you both of these guys have the potential to get that 2,000 yard receiver season, and I think that they should be going much closer to each other, kind of effectively back to back. And like right now, Tyreek Hill is going behind Austin Eckler. I think you probably want to just move him up a little bit closer to Jamar Chase in the rankings. I don't think I'm willing to take it as far as saying that Tyreek Hill should be the second overall pick in fantasy this season, but I for sure think he's being a little bit underrated right now. And I think it relates to the concerns about Tua that, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago on this very show.
What if I told you they're back to back in the wide receiver rankings? They're wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3.
Right, but what are the overall rankings?
I think, in the first round, I think that you can always kind of mix and match depending upon, you know, the volume that you're playing in. Like if I'm pick 3 or pick 2 on 3 straight drafts, I'm not taking Jamar Chase every single draft, right? I'm mixing that in. I want to diversify my portfolio, and I want to make sure that I have Tyreek Hill in there. I want to make sure I have Jamar Chase in there. I want to make sure I have Christian McCaffrey in there. So I think that when we're talking about round one picks, you never want to have more, in my opinion, more than 20% roughly of any given player. Mm-hmm. So if you do, let's just say that you're at 30% or 40% of that given player inside your draft, and that player goes down, you just lost 30 to 40% of your portfolio, right? And we got to look at drafting the same as we do with stocks, and diversifying is important from you from a lot from a, to mitigate loss. And I think we have to do that with players as well. I think we're splitting hairs. Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, I mean, both inside the projections right now. The projected for PPR points, 335.8 and 332.8. So we're talking about a half a touchdown between the two of them.
Yeah, and I think that it's not just like, you know, what brought this up is not simply, oh, they're very similar. I think they're very neck and neck in terms of their potential outcomes. But I think if you look at their efficiency metrics from last season, Tyreek Hill was on another plane of existence. I mean, you're talking about 27.9% target rate for Chase, and that was 33.6% for Tyreek Hill. He was more than 5% more targets per route. If you look at formation adjusted yards per route run, which is yards per route run, but it accounts for how many receivers are on the field with you, so it makes it an even more contextualized version of yards per route run. Tyreek Hill had a full yard more than Jamar Chase. He was at 3.22, while Chase was at 2.11. So Chase was 17th, still very good. Anything over 2 is an elite receiver, and Tyreek Hill's over 3. That's like where Cooper Kupp was in 2021. He obviously led the league in yards per route run as well. He was just absolutely crushing everybody last season. So I think that's why I think if I'm drafting right now, it's probably very close. I'm talking like a 55-45 ratio between these two guys. If I had the number 2 or number 3 overall pick 100 times. And I think that, you know, I think the general perception of these players is much farther apart. It's like Jamar Chase is untouchable. And that's because of his insanely efficient rookie season. And I mean, he was crazy good last year too. I remember week 6 and week 7, he scored 30 points back to back. And it turned out he injured his hip in the first of those two games, and he just played through it and put up the wide receiver 1 score for those 2 weeks. Jamar Chase is an absolute stud, but his yards per reception went down from 18 as a rookie to 12 last year. So his overall per target efficiency cratered. I think that was because of how defenses learned to just treat him as a true number one option, and he didn't get those games where he was sneaking up on people like a rookie. And I just think that if you look at any efficiency metric last season, Tyreek Hill blew Jamar Chase and the rest of the league out of the water outside of Justin Jefferson. So I think that this is very much a debate to be had, and I don't think it's a debate that's being had because Jamar Chase's public perception is so much greater than Tyreek Hill's.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, like I said, both these players are exceptional, and we're splitting hairs here. But at the end of the day, for me, it breaks down to who they're tied to in quarterback, right? And we mentioned the injury risk with Tua. And I know we can't rely, or it's almost nearly impossible to predict injuries, but concussions are another a beast. And we have to really consider that when we're doing these rankings. Again, I think Tyreek has the ability to just take it to the house any given play. The area that he hasn't been as efficient in chasing is been receiving touchdowns. And I know it's one of the most variable stats in football and hard to predict. However, he's only eclipsed the 10 mark in two separate occasions since 2016. Ja'Marr Chase did it his rookie year and nearly did it last year in just playing 12 games. So he only had 12 games last year where we had Tyreek with 17, and he still scored two more touchdowns than him. When it counts and they're in the red zone. Tyreek
had two rushing touchdowns, so for what it's worth.
Okay, thank you, Dario. Thank you. From a receiving standpoint, Ja'Marr Chase, in my opinion, is just an alpha receiver, right? Tyreek relies on his speed, and he's been exceptional at it and has been burning players since day one. When you get in the red zone and we need to convert, they continue to go back to Ja'Marr Chase, right? They didn't really add any tight end free agency here. They're going to add it in the draft, which signifies to me that they're going to continue to rely on their two big receivers, Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, both of these teams, we think, are going to be looking to add a tight end in this draft. The tight end class is very deep, very good. And neither of these, I mean, you know, no disrespect to Irv Smith, but I do think that the Bengals should probably look to add another solid tight end for their future. And then the Dolphins are completely without a tight end. But I think
the other piece for me, real quick, Dario, is snap share. I want the player who's on the field more. And I know that Tyreek has been very efficient. He has been. And he has to be because he's only on the field 76% of the time, where Ja'Marr Chase is on the field 93% of the time or more. And we all know opportunity is king in fantasy football. And Tyreek gets a lot of opportunities, but he's almost seeing 20% more snaps than Tyreek is on an annual basis. And I want to have that player who's in on every single snap on the field and has the opportunity to convert. I think either way you want to do in a draft room, I'm not going to argue. I've taken Tyreek Hill ahead of Ja'Marr Chase. I've taken Ja'Marr Chase ahead of Tyreek Hill. I can see where either of these players are the wide receiver one come the end of the season as well.
Yeah, for me, for sure.
It just breaks down to touchdowns, the better quarterback, and in my opinion, the snaps. There's those three main criteria for me and why I like Ja'Marr Chase ahead of Tyreek this year.
To me, air yards are a far more significant indicator of opportunity than snap share. And Tyreek Hill had 20 more air yards per game than Ja'Marr Chase last season, even though Tyreek Hill was obviously, like you said, playing fewer snaps. I think if you're getting more air yards on fewer snaps, I care much more about the air yards. He led the league in deep targets last season. And like you said, I mean, Tyreek only had 11 red zone targets to Chase's 26. I think that's probably the one biggest hole that you can poke. But I think that just in terms of all around efficiency, Tyreek Hill was on another planet last season. He should very much be in consideration for that 2-3-4 overall pick range this season.
Well, if you're going to be an underdog draft, Dario, you're going to be taking Tyreek Hill. I'm going to be taking Ja'Marr Chase, depending upon where we're at inside that draft room. But let's take a minute to hear from one of our sponsors, Underdog, and we'll be right back.
Let's take a moment to talk about Underdog Fantasy. Now, many of you have already signed up. Thousands have signed up from Player Profile already over the years. Underdog has supported us since 2020. Much of what you see on Player Profiler is because of Underdog, because of their support. Get the Underdog app, plug in that promo code Underworld, and they're making the NBA fun. Their NBA pick'ems, it's changed my Wednesday night. It's changed my Sunday afternoon. I used to play Underdog just for the best ball drafts. I mean, the best ball drafts are amazing. These draft rooms fill so quickly, and you can win life-changing money. You want to take advantage of all the sleepers we talk about on this show? Well, what better place than in an Underdog draft room to do that? And I recommend taking your Underdog play to the next level by diving into their NFL pick'ems. It's important to correlate those NFL pick'ems. You can pick both the quarterbacks and the wide receivers to exceed expectations. Correlate them, and you can 5x your payout. Bada bing, bada boom. Underdog Fantasy, the promo code is Underworld. For an instant deposit match up to $100, Underdog is the truest friend of the Underworld.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I love your robot sound there, Dario. Let's move on to some sophomore wide receivers. All right. We have three here that are all three, in my opinion, are going to be exceptional receivers in this league. And we talk about Treylon Burks, Jahan Dotson, and George Pickens. When we take a look at the receiver rankings, we have Burks at Burks is at wide receiver 41. Yeah. Dotson is at 38. And we have Pickens, who is at 37.
This one, I'm going to come on strong. Burks should be ahead of both of those guys. Treylon Burks, way more efficient on a per route basis last season. The Tennessee offense is completely depleted of weapons. He has every possible path to being the target leader for this team. They drafted him to be AJ Brown's replacement, and he showed some very good efficiency numbers last year as a rookie. I don't see any reason why those other guys should be ahead of Treylon Burks. If you just look at their per route efficiency stats last season, when Burks was on the field, he was by far the best of this group of three. He has the clearest path to opportunity this season. He has no alpha ahead of him like Pickens does with Deontay Johnson and Dotson does with Terry McLaurin. There's just so many reasons to be drafting Burks ahead of Pickens and Dotson right now. I think that it's just, to me, this is someone, a case where your rankings are wrong. A lot of places the ADP is wrong. I think Pickens is going ahead of Burks on both Underdog and FFPC, although it looks like Burks is going ahead of Dotson on both of those sites. So I think you need to slow down on the Dotson train, and I think we need to be shoving more coal into the Burks train, because this is just completely egregious that a guy with a significantly higher targets per route run, significantly higher yards per route run, these are kind of like benchmark metrics, in my opinion, where if you're getting targeted on 25% of your routes or so, that's a very good number. For Burks, that was 23.8 last season, very close. And then for Pickens and Dotson, that number was in the teens. I mean, we're talking about 16.3% for George Pickens. George Pickens' yards per route run, 1.54. That's completely mediocre for an NFL receiver. Treylon Burks, 1.96. Like I mentioned when we were talking about Jamar Chase, 2 is kind of the golden number there. You want to be getting 2 yards per route run. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave were both obviously clearing that number by a lot last season as rookies. But I think that Treylon Burks is kind of the sneaky third in this class, and for some reason people are infatuated with Pickens' size, and I don't know what it is with Jahan. I mean, I like Jahan Dotson too, but I think that Treylon Burks was clearly ahead of both of them.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Burks is the clear-cut one in his offense. That's safe to say. Pickens is the clear-cut two in this offense, maybe the third option behind Freiermuth. Then you have Jahan Dotson, who, in my opinion, is the clear-cut number two in this offense. It's a simple numbers game for me when you look at the attempts that Washington and Pittsburgh has and expected pass attempts this year inside of our formula versus what Tennessee has. Tennessee is bottom of the league, right? Bottom five. They're at 505 attempts that are expected for 2022. Washington is 585. So that literally 80 more attempts this season. Pittsburgh is almost 100 more attempts in the passing attempts. Just on the passing, that's 100 more. That's a lot of distribution. And even if the number two here may see more opportunities than the number one inside Tennessee. Tennessee is a run first team. We know they're going to lean and pound the rock with Derrick Henry. That's what they do. They're also having now a quarterback identity crisis. We may see Malik Willis this year. We may see a rookie this year. We're hoping from a fantasy perspective it's Ryan Tannehill, but if it's not, it could get ugly fast. We look back at those games that Willis started and it was disgusting. I fear that if we do see more Willis, regardless if he's the number one or not, regardless of how efficient he is when he is on the field, we're going to see serious regression with anyone else outside of Tannehill at quarterback on this offense. And it breaks down simply to the amount of pass attempts that they have for me and him being able to outproduce these guys who are going to be seeing more receptions and more attempts per game.
I just think that like right now, our projection for Burks is fairly conservative. I think 23%. He very much has a chance to exceed this by a large amount because, like we said, he's earning 23% of targets on his routes as a rookie. He's only going to get better. All of these guys are only going to get better, presumably. But the baseline for Burks is a lot higher. I do think that there are valid concerns there, but I mean, I don't think that Kenny Pickett or Sam Howell are exactly, it's not exactly Joe Burrow throwing the ball to George Pickens. I think if there was, then we'd be having a different conversation. But these are all guys in kind of iffy quarterback situations. Burks is the only one without other major targets in his offense. I think that, you know, like there are some valid concerns with the total size of the pie, but getting to 20% of the targets, which is where we have Pickens right now, is a little optimistic in an offense with Freiermuth and Deontay Johnson. And I think getting to 25, 26, 27% of a smaller offense for Burks is very realistic this season, very attainable. I think he's someone that we should be buying and frankly ranking ahead of these other two rookies coming into 2023.
Even if you bumped him up to, and we're doing this live, folks, by the way, let's go ahead and even share this screen for people so they can see it.
you can't give away the secret sauce, Billy.
All right, we'll just talk about the numbers. Treylon Burks right now at 23% target share is at 116 targets. If we bump that up 25%, Dario, that's only still 126 targets. Where if we head on over to the AFC North and we take a look at George Pickens, at 20% is 120 targets. So 5% less of the total target share, and we're only talking about 6 targets. That's how much this volume and this pass attempts matter when we're doing these projections.
I agree with you that they matter, but I think that we also have to have some, like, we have to think about these from a, like, with a little bit of humility and say, look, in a world where our projections are wrong in some way, like, this is already close to, this projection is close to the ceiling for pass attempts for the Steelers, right? Whereas if Tennessee is even middle of the road and they get 25, 30, 40 more pass attempts, without even getting more efficient, Treylon Burks has so much room to grow. I mean, we saw AJ Brown put up some very good seasons in this offense while it was still
but you're,
run heavy.
You're, I'm not your saying argument right be... now is assuming that their receiver core stays the same. And I don't think it does. They're definitely going to be addressing this position in the draft. And if it doesn't land the player they want, they're going to go back to the free agent market, which is depleted. But what we see as wide receiver 2, 3, and 4 on this team will not be the same come middle of May.
Sure.
We also forget how efficient Chig was. I can't say his last name or I'd say it, the tight end, Chig Okonwo, however you say it. But Chigo was extremely efficient, and I would not surprise me if he's nearing 20% target share. Right now, we've projected for 15%. You start adding in another receiver in the mix, and I'd say it's going to be pretty hard for Treylon Burks to hit 25%.
I would still disagree with you because, look, if you look at these, we're still, like, there are still phantom targets left to be distributed in this offense. We're missing 20% of this offense's target share because we're assuming someone else is going to show up. I think that that's like the absolute worst case for Burks. And even then, I just don't see that extreme happening. And I think that at the end of the day, these efficiency stats that I'm talking about, yards per route run, targets per route run, they're the best indicators we have of how talented a wide receiver is when he's on the field, especially as a rookie. And Treylon Burks very much shined through in that. I mean, he was 1.81 formation adjusted yards per route run. That was 1.42 for Dotson. So there's a very clear difference. I guess, you know, Pickens is the one where the debate's a little bit more contentious. Pickens also had 1.41 formation adjusted yards per route run. So Burks is clearly well ahead of both Dotson and Pickens in efficiency. And I think that's just like, that to me is the strongest indicator of how good a receiver is. And at the end of the day, talent wins out. Like if Burks is as good as these metrics, these underlying metrics suggest he is, then he's going to be a very solid wide receiver one in this league, and he should be being drafted ahead of guys who aren't even the number one receivers on their own team.
So we didn't talk a lot about Jahan Dotson. I want to mix him into this conversation as well. So Jahan Dotson last year had a pretty damn good rookie campaign. I mean, he did get injured. He only ended up playing 12 games. But when you take a look at his game logs, he was scoring touchdowns. He was a factor in the red zone. He was being targeted frequently in the red zone. We saw nearly two per game down the stretch, one per game in every single game except for week three in the first, first five starts. And so love how they were utilizing him inside the red zone and what his opportunity was there. I think it's clear that he has taken over the number two in this offense. We have a new offensive coordinator here as well. It's going to be creative in getting players the ball. They're going to get Dotson even more involved than he was last year. Again, breaking down to the numbers, at 19% target share, still 111 targets. So only nine off of what Treylon Burks was. I think that this offense is just in general a lot better, right, than Tennessee is. Tennessee is pretty disgusting. Like, it's gross. And outside Derrick Henry, outside Chigo, outside Burks, there's nobody else in this offense. And it's very well possible we see double coverage on Treylon Burks for them to force them to run the ball when they try to stack the box. Stack the box, double cover Burks. This offense is shut down. Pretty simple. It's going to force them to throw the ball to another receiver. It's going to force them to get Chigo the ball. And you're going to be able to pull Treylon Burks out of the equation, where all these other teams that we're talking about, they have other weapons. They're going to be able to keep defenses honest. They're not going to be able to load the box up. They're not going to be able to double cover the sophomore receiver that we're discussing. So there's a lot more opportunity for these other players to succeed because their offenses are a lot more balanced.
I personally don't try to play defensive coordinator when I'm making projections in April. So you're more than welcome to run away with that. But I think the thing that's very interesting is, like you said, the sizes of the pies are very different.
It served me pretty well over the past couple years talking about trying to put my defensive coordinator hat on, trying to project the future, right? And no, we're not always right, but it gets you in a mindset where you have to think about these things. And I like to do three sets of projections. In April, I'm not doing all three, because the draft hasn't even started, right? But once we get the draft, I like to go back and look at this and say, okay, I have a mean projection, I have a low projection, I have a high projection, right? And when I look at the high for all these players, Treylon Burks, the target share is nice, but I still think that the amount of passes that we're seeing in these other offenses and the fact that they have more weapons allows their high to be a lot higher than Treylon Burks, who we're seeing as just nothing but run first.
I just think you're underestimating the importance of the efficiency that Burks showed. I mean, Pickens, he was better in his first few games, and then when they traded away Claypool and everyone thought he was going to take over as the number two weapon, that was when Freiermuth peaked in terms of his target earning capacity. So whatever was going on, George Pickens and his chemistry with Kenny Pickett and his ability to earn targets down the stretch. I mean, he had games with two targets, three targets, four targets down the second half of last season. And I mean, Burks, yeah, like you look at some Malik Willis games where he had, you know, two targets as well, but he's just been so much better. Like, I don't know that there's much else, in my opinion, to look at from this argument besides the per route efficiency. If you look at the air yards share, I mean, it was Pickens does look better there because his targets are relatively deep, but Burks is still the highest air yards share of these three receivers. Like, I think there's a lot of indicators that Burks is going to be the more talented NFL receiver of these three guys. And I think that very much makes up for some differences in the overall size of the offense.
Let's talk about the last player today. It's me, Kyle Pitts. This is the Twitter darling, right? I have never been that high on Kyle Pitts. I have been lower on him every single year. I am again lower on Kyle Pitts inside my rankings. I have him right now inside the projections as tight end number nine. I have him behind Darren Waller. I have him behind Evan Engram. I have him behind Pat Freiermuth and George Kittle, and then the big four. Assuming the machine doesn't like this, walk me through your thought process here, Dario.
This is another one that I think is just plain and simple. you have Kyle Pitts projected for 18.5% of the targets in the Atlanta Falcons offense. Last time we saw Kyle Pitts on the field, he earned a 27% target share last season. I know this isn't going to be an elite offense by any stretch. It doesn't seem like they're going to be pass heavy, but I think this projection is just his absolute floor. I mean, the guy earned a target on 34% of his routes last season. That was number one among all tight ends. And he did that at 23% of his routes as a rookie. There's just no way that he sees this little opportunity on a team that spent the number four overall pick on him. I find it unfathomable that they would utilize him. You know, it's we think that they underutilized him last year, and that was still 27% target share. And you're bringing him all the way down to 18%. It just doesn't compute with the machine.
When we look at the rest of this offense, we talked about Drake London the other week, who it was nearing close to 30% target share. Okay. We can't have two. We're not going to have two players on this team who are going to have 60% of the target share. When you also look at the volume,
who else is going to get them? Kadarius Hodge.
Like they brought in another tight end as well. They brought in Jonnu Smith. Right. And I'm not saying Jonnu Smith is this Lord and Savior, but it is another competing tight end that Pitts is having to compete against. They went out and traded for him. We know that Arthur Smith has been utilizing two tight ends. He has ever since he was an offensive coordinator. We know that he also likes to run the ball a lot, and he likes to involve his running backs in the passing game. When we look at the pass attempts, Atlanta is expected in our projections 498 pass attempts. It is literally the last in the league. They ran the ball so much last year. We're going to expect them to continue to run the ball. That's why I've talked about them possibly taking Bijan Robinson inside the top 10 in the draft, because they can want to continue to hammer and pound the ball on the ground. I think Kyle Pitts will command a target share, but when I look at the projection, this number, the 18.5%, is more about the total piece of the pie come the end of the year, right? I don't think it's, if you look at when he's just on the field, right? I would say that, yes, I think on a per game basis, he's probably going to see more than 18.5% target share. But when you look at total targets here, that 18.5% is 92 targets. When we take a look at what he's done in his career, he played 17 games in 2021.
That was 110 targets.
110 targets. Last year, he had 60 targets in 10 games. We're just slightly down here. I do expect them to take another receiver in this draft. So I do think they're going to add another positional player. I think they're probably going to also attack the running back position. Like I said, I would not be surprised if they took Bijan in with their first pick. This offense is just wants to run the ball. And I think regardless how you look at it, as athletic as Kyle Pitts is, he's arguably the most athletic tight end in the league. They just don't throw enough and they don't target him enough. They put him out wide and now he doesn't have the mismatches that he would if they ran him in line against linebackers. They misuse him. And that's why I have him in my ranking.
He was fifth in expected fantasy points per game last season among tight ends. Obviously, underproducing in the touchdown column really hurts him in that regard.
I mean, Marcus Mariota is gone.
What?
He underproduced in every column, in my opinion. Everyone was taking him as a top four tight end last year.
Well, yeah. I mean, like if he got hurt, obviously he underproduced. But I think that, you know, his targets per route run was still higher than Drake London's. It was close. His target share came in just behind Drake London. I think that we could very much be looking at two alphas in this offense.
Who's throwing the ball right now? Is it Ritter? We're protecting Ritter.
I don't think that matters. I don't think that affects the fact that...
Of course it matters.
Well, obviously it matters, but like it shouldn't matter so much that he's ranked behind Evan Engram and Pat Freiermuth. I think that he should be the tight end six behind Kittle, because Kittle also has an extremely high weekly upside.
Evan Engram has Trevor Lawrence thrown the ball and he had 98 targets last year. This offense is expected.
Kyle Pitts had 110 targets as a rookie. I mean,
was literally as the only player on the field because Calvin Ridley was suspended. And he was gone. So he was the only player. He was technically their ex receiver as a tight end, hence the 110 targets. So when he had nobody else to compete with, he only had 110 targets.
And
now he has the alpha Drake London. Now he has an alpha Drake London to compete with, who also commanded a near 30% target share. There's just not enough volume in this offense for him to be a top five tight end. Unless he has double digit.
He's extremely athletic. He's earned very impressive per route stats and very impressive, you know, like yards per reception. Like I said, 110 targets and 15 yards per reception as a rookie. He had 1,000 air yards, 1,100 air yards as a rookie. There's just so much talent. I think that people are a little bit scared away because of the injury last year, but there's just, I think that he has, I mean, if we talk about upside, right? His chances of finishing,
I could see where
as a top three tight end, significantly clear Darren Waller, Pat Freiermuth, and Evan Ingram. I think that this is just
Waller is surrounded by a bunch of chumps right now. We have Slayton, we have Shepard, who's never healthy. We have Wandale coming off an ACL injury. You have Hodgins, who they re-signed. They went out and got Paris Campbell. Like, if you add in every one of those receivers except for Paris Campbell, I mean, with exception of Hodgins, we might get 12 games out of them. Where Darren Waller now is like the de facto. That's a partly joke, but it's partly true. And you know, it's funny. Darren Waller is now the de facto number one in this offense. They went out and got him in free agency because they didn't believe in this free agency class. So I could understand one player ahead of in my rankings that you maybe could make an argument with. That's Pat Freiermuth. But again, it goes back to pass volume. This is the same debate that we just had, where they had 606 our expected pass attempts versus the which team was it we were just talking about? We were talking about Tennessee. So the same concept can be here for Atlanta. Both of them bottom five in pass attempts. Again, probably bottom five in pass attempts. He's going to have to command a 30% target share and see double digit touchdowns in order for him to return top five tight end performance for the year.
His air yards were there. He was, even though he only
played, you don't get fantasy points for air yards.
Think about this, Billy. He only played 10 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was still fifth among all tight ends in air yards. I mean, you'd say opportunity is king, to quote you from 5 minutes ago. And he's absolutely crushing the opportunity department for tight ends. I remember, I mean, every indicator of his, of like what is an underlying breakout, a guy with a completely talented skill set that was just, you know, is on the verge of putting all the pieces together. He has that. I mean, he had a game with 200 air yards last season, but he only caught two of those targets because he was, you know, catching the ball from Marcus Mariota. I do think Desmond Ridder can be more accurate down the field than Mariota. And I just think there's way too many indicators pointing to Kyle Pitts being extremely efficient and elite as a simple receiver athlete on the field, that like Evan Ingram and like, you know, Pat Freiermuth have never displayed that extreme level of efficiency. And if that doesn't translate to upside, I don't know what does.
We're going to do rapid fire. Kyle Pitts or Darren Waller in redraft for you?
Pitts.
Okay. Kyle Pitts or Evan Ingram for you?
Pitts. I'm telling you, Pitts ahead of all these. This whole tier, you got Pitts too low.
Or Pat Freiermuth?
Still Pitts.
Kyle Pitts or George Kittle?
I think that's where it gets interesting. I think probably leaning Kittle right now. I mean, it's like if I'm in a draft room right now, that's where you have to be taking Pitts. Like, you're fading him into oblivion. Like, with your rankings right now, you'd be getting zero Kyle Pitts. And
how much Kyle Pitts do you think I own? I might have one share for diversity right now, but this is a player. Every year I have a set amount of players and I say, I'm going to make them beat me. Kyle Pitts, I'm going to make him beat me this year, because the cost right now at ADP, I would rather take Pat Freiermuth three or four rounds later that you get in some of these drafts. I'd rather take, you know, Darren Waller. I'd rather take Dalton Schultz multiple rounds later than take Kyle Pitts where he's going at ADP right now. At cost right now, I think Kyle Pitts is one of the worst draft picks that you can take right now in any format. It's too expensive.
I mean, that can be true, and you can still be way too low on him. Like, I think, like I'm saying, probably still should be behind Kittle. Right now he's going slightly ahead of Kittle on FFPC, but like, just think about the outlier seasons that determine who wins fantasy championships. Kyle Pitts is very capable of that outcome. I just don't think Evan Ingram is. I don't think Pat Freiermuth is.
So we just talked about
Darren Waller's about to be 33.
You said a key word. Everyone in this tier. Okay. That tier in which you have Kyle Pitts at the top and I have Kyle Pitts at the bottom, that tier is separated by 44 picks of ADP. Kyle Pitts right now at FFPC is 41.5, where Pat Freiermuth is 85.2. If we have them in the same tier, how can we possibly suggest for players to take Kyle Pitts ahead of Pat Freiermuth when you can get him nearly four rounds later?
I mean, that's the question is, you have Freiermuth ranked ahead of Pitts.
I do.
And that doesn't compute because, I mean,
pass attempts.
If you look at the market, you know, clearly Kyle Pitts' upside is
eclipse 600 pass attempts this year, where I would be surprised if Atlanta eclipsed 510 or 520.
And with Kyle Pitts getting 25% target share, like he
should be 30 earlier. The machine said 30 earlier. He's already doing updates. He's already
No. I mean, he 30% targets per route run, 25% total target share. You have him 18.5. It's ridiculous. I saw that and I was like, oh, you know, let me check. Let me look at Kyle Pitts' player page. Let's see how efficient he was. And he's been ridiculously efficient. This is just like, this projection is egregious. I think if you make it even, I think you're bringing the emotion into this. You're taking pride in being low on Kyle Pitts for some reason. But in reality, if you just look at these numbers and you look at how efficient Kyle Pitts has been his entire career, as a rookie, as a sophomore, he had a fluky injury. I mean, you know, everyone has some bad injury luck here and there, but we draft to win championships. I think that, you know, like I'm not saying that Kyle Pitts at his current ADP is a steal. I don't think I'm drafting him ahead of his ADP, but your rankings suggest that you should take Freiermuth ahead of Pitts in a vacuum, that you should take, you know, Ingram ahead of Pitts in a vacuum. And that is just, to me, egregious.
Let's talk Evan Ingram. So this is a valid point that James brings up here, that Ingram has so much more target share or target competition, and the Jags are getting Ridley this year, which is the same comment as him having more competition. Thanks, Jared or James. Again, that one to me is simple math, right? We have Atlanta just not throwing the ball as much. Jacksonville, in our projections right now, expected pass attempts is at 595, where we have Atlanta at 498. And so we're expecting this offense, the Jacksonville Jaguars offense, to be much more efficient. We're going to be moving the chains, getting downfield, right? I can't say the same for Atlanta, right? Where they're going to rely on the run a lot. So I think these are all great discussions because these are the questions that we see in draft rooms, right? Which tight end are we selecting? I think, again, I want to just reiterate for everybody here who's watching, listening, that it's important to diversify. And we're not taking, if you are on the Pitts side, we're not taking Pitts every time here, right? It's important for you to mix in the Evan Ingrams, to mix in Darren Wallers, to mix in the other players. All I'm saying is that from where Kyle Pitts is going in draft rooms, and yes, in the projections as well, I am low on him. And it's rightfully so because I don't want the subscribers drafting him. Where he's going inside draft rooms right now, you can literally get the same tier 40 picks later. And I'm 100% leaning that way.
I mean, I think, I don't know. I think that he's in his own tier, maybe behind, I think he's closer to Kittle in terms of upside, in terms of raw talent, than he is to Darren Waller, frankly. Like if we look at the underdog ADPs that are on our player rankings, you have Kyle Pitts basically behind three guys who have ADPs that are 20 picks later. And it just doesn't make any sense. I think you can be low on Pitts without saying don't draft a single share. I think it's a mistake not to draft a single share of Kyle Pitts because, like I said, extremely efficient per route, extremely good at earning opportunity deep down the field. His air, like, how do you finish who finishes number five in air yards while missing seven games? That's unheard of. That's like extremely studly performance from Kyle Pitts. And you're just sweeping that under the rug, projecting him for 18.5% target share. It's disrespectful.
If only we got fantasy points for air yards. Oh, I would love my season last year. That is the end of Man vs. Machine season or episode 3. We're going to throw a poll up in the community. Once it's posted, we'll throw it down in the chat as well. We appreciate you voting. We would like to note that the man is 2-0 in those votes versus the machine. So Dario has laid out his case this week in Man vs. Machine episode 3. We appreciate you all tuning in. We'll see you all back here next week. Dario will probably be in China that time. So thanks for traveling the world, Dario. See y'all then.
Be sure to subscribe and activate those alerts so you get notified as soon as new videos drop. And be sure to check out playerprofiler.com. We have all the tools for you to dominate every type of fantasy league. We have a draft kit, Dynasty Deluxe, Data Analysis, DFS Dominator, and don't forget the player rankings to rule them all.